Turn it on. Okay. it only depends on how the superpotential looks at infinity. And this smells of topology. Okay, it does, because it is, actually. Okay? And we can introduce a very smart thing, which goes very far, if you push it. Okay? He introduced the so-called Witten index, which in fancy notation is written as trace minus 1 to the f. What that really means is the following. Every state in Hilbert space of that quantum mechanical system you call bosonic or fermionic. Okay? And so this operator, if you treat it as an operator, is minus 1 if the state is fermionic and plus 1 if it's bosonic. And taking the trace means that you sum over all states. So this is a normal language. Okay? You sum over all eigenstates of the Hamiltonian. For every state, you get plus 1 if it's bosonic and minus 1 if it's fermionic. So this sum goes over all energy states and it computes the difference of numbers of bosonic and fermionic states at all energies. Okay? Now, as we argued before, and it can be proven in great generality, all states of non-zero energy are degenerate. This means that when E is non-zero, these terms will always cancel. So the only term that contributes to this index is the zero energy states. So this index really counts the difference between the zero energy states which are bosonic and the ones that are fermionic. The great thing about that index is that it is invariant under smooth changes of the parameters of the theory. In the case of the potential, the superpotential, so long as you don't touch what happens at infinity, you can do everything crazy in between. And this index doesn't change. I will argue that in a moment. So, in particular, if this index is non-zero, this means that this minus this is non-zero, so one of them must be non-zero, therefore, a zero-energy ground state exists. So you get a lot of information about the existence of a zero-energy ground state or not, simply from knowing the index. On the other hand, the index, as I will argue, is invariant under such deformations. So deformations means that, for example, you can change the coupling constants of the theory, you can change the volume, you can change all kinds of parameters. And you can compute the index at weak coupling, where you can say you can do perturbation theory, and you know that it's true at strong coupling. But this is a theorist's dream, right? Theorists usually try to compute things, right? And usually when the coupling is strong, we are lost. And here we have an example where something can be computed at weak coupling, and it's true at strong coupling. So it is a big deal. So let me prove to you that indeed this thing doesn't change. In fact, it's almost obvious because generically a spectrum of a supersymmetric system looks like that. It is usually not equidistant, but what's important is that all non-zero energy states are paired. So when you change the parameters, states can leave zero energy or become zero energy. But they can only do so in pairs. Because so long as they have non-zero energy, they have to be paired. But if they're paired, they don't contribute to the index. So as you change the parameters, the coupling, the volume, etc., the spectrum can change, indeed. But the difference between the number of zero energy levels with bosonic minus fermionic will never change. Because everything that leaves zero energy must do so in pairs. So it's the law of supersymmetry. And so it turns out that this is very useful for mathematics. And our example was a very simple one. But you can consider more complicated examples. This is, as far as mathematics goes, this is the most complicated one I know. So you can consider quantum mechanics moving not on the line. You can consider quantum mechanics of a particle moving on a sphere. Or you can consider quantum mechanics of a particle moving on a torus. These are dimension 2 Riemann surfaces that have a genus G, which basically counts the number of handles. So the sphere has no handle. The torus you can think of as attaching a handle to the sphere, etc. And what you can show for supersymmetric quantum mechanics of particles moving on these spaces is that the Witten index of that quantum mechanics is equal to the Euler characteristic of those spaces, which is related to the genus, very simply. And so for a physicist, you can obtain classic results in mathematics by studying supersymmetric quantum mechanics and its partition function. So in particular, by studying how a particle moves on a sphere, you can derive the Gauss-Bonnet theorem, which says that the Euler characteristic of the sphere is the integral of the curvature. Okay? And in fact, for me, it's the easiest way to obtain it. Okay? Now, you have to study supersymmetric quantum mechanics. But what this illustrates is this relation between physics and mathematics, which is brought about by supersymmetry. So you're studying a physical system. Some might disagree that a particle moving on a sphere is a physical system. But, it is. There is a Hamiltonian. There is, you use quantum mechanics. So it is a physical system and gives you quantities in mathematics, such as topological properties of various spaces. And there is this book by our esteemed Kentaro Hori and many other famous people in the field, including Kentaro, about mirror symmetry, which makes extensive use of this. It's 929 pages. That includes the index, but it doesn't help. Okay. most of this book I don't understand, but it is certainly there. I want to tell you about some uses of the index in cases that I understand and which I believe are relevant for nature. There is a close relation between the index, the Witten index of quantum mechanics, and what is called the index of the Dirac operator in external, say, electromagnetic or weak fields or color fields. The index of the Dirac operator is the difference between the left-handed and right-handed zero modes of that operators. I'll tell you where it's applicable. And the way one can derive formulae for this index is to engineer a supersymmetric quantum mechanics where the Dirac operator is kind of like a supercharge and the gamma 5, the chirality matrix, is kind of like minus 1 to the f. In fact, it's very precise. And then the easiest way to derive, for me, index theorems is to obtain the is to do it this way. Now, not all index theorems were derived that way. And in fact, the ones that are used here were derived by other methods. But there were many new ones that were gotten this way. So what is the physical relevance of these things? The physical relevance, this will be just, I'll mention a few things. In the weak interactions, it turns out there are processes where fermion number is violated. And the presence of zero modes of the Dirac operators in some complicated gauge backgrounds is very important for that. And it turns out that these processes of baryon and lepton number violation may have something to do with generating the baryon asymmetry of the universe. So they explain why we are here and why we're made of baryons rather than anti-baryons. In the strong interactions, these things have to do with the U1 problem, why the eta prime is so large, or the axion mass, which is a resolution of the strong CP problem. And most importantly, the weak interactions are described by chiral fermions. Chiral fermions treat left and right separately. And the only way we understand how a chiral fermion can emerge from some higher, from some UV completion of the standard model is via a non-trivial index of Dirac operators. So in this framework, the reason why we exist is the non-zero index of something. Okay? So it's not a joke to know about indices. So what is the moral of my talk so far? I have one more example and then after this and then I stop. The moral is that supersymmetry has led to some very interesting developments, very beautiful, important, etc., in mathematical physics. So I hope I have argued that it is of interest, whether or not weak-scale supersymmetry that people at the LHC will look for, particles of with mass of order, the W boson mass and the Z boson mass are somewhat higher, whether or not they exist, this thing is interesting. And of course, we hope to prove or disprove the existence of supersymmetry. The worst thing would be to have an answer we are not sure, which might happen, actually. And finally, the last example is another example of physics where supersymmetry shows up. It has nothing to do with quantum mechanics. It's the theory of motion driven by random noise and the relaxation to equilibrium. This will be very quick. Okay, so consider the following situation. A Brownian particle. So this is if you ignore the last term, this is simply the equation of motion of a particle which is experience of force, a potential force minus W prime. W is the potential. And I have neglected the kinetic term of this particle. If the friction is big, this is what you do. If you have honey sliding down a bottle, sort of this is the kind of equation you want to solve. So you have a high viscosity limit. This is the equation of motion at high viscosity. And then you have random noise. This random noise is, what kicks this Brownian particle around. This equation is called the Langevin equation. This epsilon is plus minus 1, which I introduced for, you'll see why. This noise is random, okay? It is totally uncorrelated from time to time. It is what is called a delta-correlated noise. This equation is very interesting and very peculiar because it's not an ordinary equation. It's a stochastic equation. It doesn't have an ordinary solution. The only questions you can ask is what is the probability that this particle, if it started at 0 at time equals 0, ended up at x at time equal t? And in fact, this equation has a solution for this, what you can solve for is this probability, the probability that you're at t at x if you were at 0 at 0. And after some substitution, what you obtain is an equation for this probability. It's very easy, but never mind. This equation is called the Fokker-Planck equation. It determines how this probability changes in time. It looks very much like a Schrödinger equation without the I. So it's sort of like a Euclidean Schrödinger equation. And there is something called the Fokker-Planck Hamiltonian. which looks like this. Now, this should look familiar to you, even if you didn't pay attention. Okay? Why? Because this is precisely the Hamiltonian of the supersymmetric particle from a few slides back. Except half of it. It's half of it. It's not the entire thing. Right? It's half of it because, okay, there is some trivial rescaling of this potential function, but it's half of it because here we take just one of the parts of sigma 3. So, when t goes to infinity, the general solution of this Fokker-Planck equation is a combination of all the eigenstates of this Hamiltonian with weighted by e to the minus et. Not e to the it, e to the minus et. So when t goes to infinity, right, the only thing that will survive is the lowest energy state. And so the equilibrium probability distribution, you only get the ground state wave function of this Fokker-Planck Hamiltonian, and this is the formula for the probability distribution. But what you see here is that this probability distribution exists, namely it's normalizable, only if supersymmetry in this Hamiltonian is unbroken. So the existence of an equilibrium distribution of these Brownian particles subject to a random noise is related to the unbroken supersymmetry of this Fokker-Planck Hamiltonian. What really happens, I have written here for the experts, and I hope they read it. So this example, the fact that whether equilibrium... By the way, it is not a surprising result. It's just saying that the potential should look like that, and then you have equilibrium. Makes a lot of sense. If it looks like that, there is no equilibrium because it runs away. Okay, that's clear from physics. But we're talking about supersymmetry here. Okay, so... This is just an illustration of how supersymmetry appears in all these problems. It's very general. It was discovered by Parisian Surlas in 1979. And once you think a little bit more, you see that it's not so strange that it appears, actually. It arises in many problems where averaging of a random noise occurs. In a slightly different form, it occurs when you average over a random disorder in condensed matter system. For example, you can have random impurities in a crystal, which play an important role. Those can only be described, also be described by some randomness where supersymmetry rears its head. It is always a quantum mechanical supersymmetry rather than this fundamental Poincaré space-time supersymmetry. And there are books on this subject that I haven't read. In any case, it appears. So here is my conclusion. Let's go back to the questions I asked. I asked, what is supersymmetry, what is it good for, and why we have studied it for so long. And here are my answer. It's beautiful, it's quantum mechanical, it is rich of properties. I hope you're convinced of that. It helps physicists better understand complex math. It certainly helps me do that. It helps smarter physicists actually contribute to the developments of this math, and some people even got a Fields Medal for that. What is it good for? Well, it appears in all sorts of problems, not all quantum mechanicals, such as random noise averages, topology, and classical critical phenomena. Why have we studied it for so long? Well, it's fun. Once you get into it, it's fun. And finally, it is of great interest to particle physics, and this is the subject of near future experimental developments. So that's all I had to say. Yes.
You mentioned the Wigan index.
Yes.
What is the physical interpretation in the case of noise? When you were talking about noise?
Yeah. It's just the fact that the potential, if it doesn't look like that, the Brownian particle runs away and you never reach equilibrium. To reach equilibrium, you need to have something sloshing around, right? It's that simple in this case. It's a very trivial example. To be honest, I don't think so in this example. Yeah, this is why Landau didn't care. Yes.
So you mentioned that there's a difference between loop drawing and the scheme configuration.
Yeah.
In the
yeah.
But I'm just wondering, could the speed form a circular string? How could you
draw a what?
A circular string. If the scheme configuration, a circular string.
Oh, but they're on the lattice.
Okay.
So you can draw a loop around every single spin. It's no problem. It's a lattice system of spins.
Okay.
You see? Yeah.
Okay. This is Ben Chair of your game.